This is a Pinball News production.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. Thank you for coming to listen. And thank you most of all for your support for pinball over the years. And this is a fabulous show. I've been out on the floor a little bit and last night, and it's a great representation of games, great venue, and I only wish I had been here last year when you had all of the old Stern Electronics games. Yeah, a lot of people say we should make some of those again, and it's always an interesting concept, a little difficult, but an interesting concept. How many of you have listened to me drivel on before in one of these events? Okay, not that many. That's good, because then not everybody. George, you have not. But George Gomez, be sure at noon tomorrow. Come here, George. He's going to be very interesting. I've heard him, and he is very interesting. Actually, I prefer listening to him than to myself, and that's saying a lot. Also, not quite with our company, but almost, is A.V. Carter here, who's with a PR firm that we do work with. PR firm. Why do we have a PR firm? We didn't before, but we do now because we want to expose pinball, have more and more people know about pinball, not just your group, but have more and more general population know about pinball in order to enlarge it and to continue it. She's also this is really interesting because I'm much more interested in this. We could have her come up and talk. She's a professional roller derby player, Now she's high. Don't tell me so much next time. But she's going to send me a picture of her as a roller person so that I can. I would have had it right up here, but I just found this out. I'm here. You're here. You mentioned the survey, and I see one of these. Very important that you turn this in. And at the end, how did you rate the seminar? Please give me a good rating. Somebody already has exceeded expectations, and I haven't even talked yet. And there is a part here, what can we do better? And they said beer. So I think they're probably on the right path. We're all here at this show because we have the same interest. And that's pinball. You guys, you all, ladies and gentlemen, as players, as hobbyists, as collectors, as competitors, we're interested in pinball. All the people in my company, certainly it's a business. It's how we make our living. But it's also, you know, in my case, my life's vocation and avocation, and certainly the same is true of many of the people that I work with. These people are really committed to what we do and to pinball machines and to making fun. That's what these are. These are not heart-lung machines. We don't take ourselves too seriously. They're supposed to be fun, and that's what we're creating here. A little history for those of you who don't know is that, yes, my father, Sam Stern, was a pinball manufacturer. He started as a pinball operator in the 1930s in Philadelphia. As many operators, he wanted games cheaper and sooner, so he became a pinball distributor, selling games to other operators. In 1947, as a 35-year-old punk kid, I can say he's a punk kid at 35 because I'm 66, okay? And he came in to see his suppliers into Chicago, Harry Williams, probably a 39-year-old punk kid, and Harry was like a second father to me, so I can say that about him. He came in to see Harry, sat behind Harry's desk, kidding around, put his feet up, said, why don't you sell me the pinball company? Harry said, well, I'll have to think about that. Goes up in his airplane. He had an airplane, Bonanza. Flew around Chicago for 3 hours, came down and sold my father half of Williams. So I say that I've been making pinball machines for 64 years because I was 2 years old at that time, and I've been around it all of that time. It is important to me because it's this little idolize your father, things like that. Very, very important to me. Growing up, obviously, I was always around it. I was around the factory because we moved from one to another. I saw the changes that took place in the factories and in the games. I'd go down on weekends with him when he had to work. Sit at dinners with listening to the business people, probably quietly, maybe not. And, you know, I had all the little toys that a pinball kid would have, you know, in my desk drawer instead of doing homework was the pop bumpers and posts and things like. And also, if you guys remember baseball games with the man running unit, I had all the players in my desk also, so I could play with those. You know, it's just, it was, we're always around. I had a pet rabbit. Its cage was a back box with some chicken wire over it. And the door was a little hole that the wires came through in the bottom where the neck would have been. So, you know, it's been around it all that time. I started working really when I was 16 in the stock room in 1961. Some of you, how many of you were born yet? No, don't do that. In 1961, and he started me in the stock room, and I'll mention this later, you know, why I mention it, but in the stock room because this is a manufacturing business and material control is where you make it or lose it. It's a complex product. It's a that you have to manufacture properly and efficiently. Doesn't have that big of a margin as one would like. And if you lose the parts, you lose money. You can't build the games. People are standing around. If you have too many parts when the day is over, you didn't do your purchasing right, there goes money, because what are you going to do with the parts? So, you know, he started teaching me the business and moved me into the different areas. At 66, I'm 66. I collect Social Security. I think that's amazing, but I do get Social Security, and I'm still working. I don't know how that works, but I take it. I could do politics and say they should have means testing, but I do take the money. So, I could retire. I don't need to do this, but I want to do this. I want to see pinball continue. I want to see our company continue after 25, now that it's 25 years old. I want it to be here another 25 years or more. And I think my fellow employees at Stern all have the, I'll freshen that once in a while. You know, they all have the same goal. They want to make a living, but they are committed to pinball. Most of these people have been making pinball machines their entire adult life or the good part of it. It is not an easy thing to manufacture a pinball machine. But my job is to keep this pinball company going and improve the product to have it prosper and get better. You know that in that light and having it continue that I've taken a partner, Dave Peterson. He's an investment banker, what they call a boutique investment banker, which means a smaller investment firm. He takes an active interest in our business, and you know he takes an active interest. You want somebody to be interested in pinball? He invested. Now we're going to make him interested. You put some pinball machines in his basement. He's interested. He's got it. He catches the bug, and he's into pinball. The reason that we have a partner is, you know, first of all, we needed some help to survive what we call the Lehman Brothers recession a couple years ago. So we had some input of money and changing what we were doing and the money to do that. But also, we need to create a succession plan for this business because, again, I'm 66. I'm not going to be able to do this forever and may actually want to take it a little easier one day. So his involvement and some of his people involved with us, we've had some. Some of you know Jody Dankberg from the social networking, Facebook pages, that type of thing. We're able to start restructuring a little bit, refine our systems, bring the business into the 21st century, as we say, and to solidify what we're doing once again. Again, we've been doing it for 25 years, and most of them have been doing it even before then, but we had to rebuild what we're doing and change it, because the world is changing. All the techniques are changing. If I told you what was in a factory, when I started with all the punch presses and you did everything. It was fully vertically integrated, which you couldn't afford to do today. You have to do some outsourcing, what have you. The world has changed. The manufacturing world has changed. And we are, first and foremost, a manufacturer. Again, the product is complex. There's 3,500 parts in a pinball machine. There's a half a mile of wire. We have a material requirements and planning program, an MRP, The most important thing the design group does, you think, would be designing games. That's the second most important thing. The most important thing they do is create and keep the bill of material, the parts list, because they put together this very complex parts list. Some of you may have been in manufacturing or are, and know that the MRP drives everything. If they don't have all the parts on the list, we're going to get parts and not be able to build a game. Now, if they leave off the flipper bats, Eddie Spears comes from Bally, started in the stockroom there, then our stockroom. He's grown up to be in charge of our purchasing. Director of purchasing, if we leave off the flipper bats, he's going to see it. If we leave off a ball guide or a bracket or this or that, he's not going to see it, and there's going to be $1 million of parts and no games in the building. So that MRP, that religion of keeping it is very, very important. We're a manufacturing business, complex product, 32 man hours in a pinball machine, more man hours than in a Ford Taurus that used to be built near us. That means 4 man days. You need 4 people per machine, 3.5, 4 people. You get up in volume, maybe a little less. But basically, you're looking at 100 trained people to make 25 games a day, plus supervision and what have you, in the building. It's not easy. We learned the hard way. Those of you who know anything about Laser War and Torpedo Alley know that our first games had one unique feature. They didn't work. Took some heat for that, but we shut the place down for 9 months because, you know, this is it's not easy in what our folks do, but they've got the system. We're refining the systems again. The one thing that having those couple games made us do is have what is the finest tech and part service department in the game industry. And many of you know Pat and Chaz, who do technical service. You know Dorothy, who does parts, Angel working for her. And that's really an important part of our business. And again, we developed it because we had made some mistakes and had to. Some of you have toured our factory at various shows. Anybody tour our factory in the past? Some of you have. You're all welcome to come there anytime. You were 10 minutes from O'Hare Airport. Just give us a call. Jody does tours. Some of the other people do tours. We'd love to show you what we're doing and how we do it. But for those of you who are here right now and haven't been there, we brought a little bit of the factory with Jody's help here for you. So we're going to show you a little something that we may need to... You got the lights? I want to call your attention to a couple things in that film. First of all, Jody and his folks did a great job putting that together. And as an aside, there's, you know, it's a modern world, and we have to do more and more. You've seen some of our videos for the various pinball machines and trying to get out there and get pinball out there. We have to do more and more communication, more and more social networking, and so forth. Couple things to point out in there is... Through that factory, you see a lot of test fixtures. Some were shown there. There's a lot more. There's really a lot. This testing is done all the way along. You don't inspect in quality at the end of the line. You inspect it in as you go along. So you'll see a lot of that. You'll also see a lot of little assembly fixtures, even for putting little brackets on bulbs and things like that and light bulbs in. All that stuff has been developed over the years. To me, one of the most interesting things, I always take people around that big four-poster press. The play field goes in, four posts, operator hits the two buttons, got to hit both buttons, that keeps people's hands from being inside, comes down with a lot of pressure. There's spotting fixtures that have been made with little pinprick presses. Please come and see what we're doing. Little pinprick, little nails to put pinpricks in all those play fields. Can't make a pinball machine without some kind of pinpricker. A four-poster press is what you're supposed to have because it puts the pressure on evenly. That press belonged to Gottlieb. They had two. When they were sold to Coca-Cola Columbia in 1976, they kept one. An equipment dealer got this one, and we found it in 1986, 87, when we started up 25 years ago. That thing is, well, in the first factory, we put it in a particular place, and then we rearranged the line, and you couldn't move it because it's too heavy. The forklift that moves that thing's incredible. So, any event, the thing's interesting just as a piece of history. back to our business, not just, you know, all the people that you see there that have been doing this for years. Some of those people, I'm digressing again, some of those people go back to having worked at Bally before they came to work for us. They know what a pinball machine is. Don Thorne, who was standing next to George, was with me when I took over Chicago Coin all those years ago. These people have been around. They've done this. Not having said that, you know, we're changing a lot of things. We're entering into the 21st century because these are difficult and, you know, difficult economic times for everybody, everybody in manufacturing, certainly. And so we have to learn how to do things a little different, a little better. And we'll be trying a lot of things. We've been trying a lot of things. And I ask you to understand we're trying new things. Some you're going to like, some you're not. Some we're going to find out are wrong. You'll tell us or we'll figure it out on our own. Just understand we're building this business and these game, better games, and we have to do some things differently. We can't keep doing what we've been doing. I'm going to use my Einstein quote that some of you have heard before, and that's his definition of insanity, is to keep doing what you were doing and expecting a different result. Well, we have to do things somewhat differently. We have to start learning to do differently. We have to work on systems and production techniques, and our game concept and other technical improvements. And to accomplish this, we need the people to do it. So we've added people into the business that can get us to where we want to go. You've seen Jody, which is a social networking, and he's in that film. Some of you communicated with him. You know that we've added Steve and Lyman back into our business. They both come back. And they believe in what we're doing and how we're doing it. And you know, some of you have read different drivel, know that sometimes they didn't, but they do believe in what we're doing. George Gomez here has joined us as the vice president in charge of game development, and they're going to augment Borgie, who you saw up there, John Borg, and Lonnie, and other people that we've added. We've added some more software capability, and we will be adding more. We've added more people in a buyer, an accountant, a mechanical engineer. One of the new mechanical engineers was up there shown on that film, Bob Folkowski. So, you know, we've got more people in there than we did before because we're trying to make 4 new games a year, 3.5 to 4 new games a year with different models, as you see that we're doing, different versions, different levels of those games. We continue to look at the marketplace, and you know, we find that we have different kind of customers. We're real interested in you all. You're an important part of our business, not the only part, but an important part of our business. And in fact, one of the reasons we made Tron was because you all, many of you all, wanted it. And so we said, okay, we'll do Tron as a title. We're you know, very interested in you all as collectors. We're very interested in you all as competitors. We work very closely with the IFPA, the International Flipper Pinball Association, and the Sharps, not just in the U.S., but around the world. There's tournaments at shows. There's IFPA tournaments at the shows in Italy, both Rimini and Rome. Our importer distributor supports them. We have tournaments at our premier events where we show our new games. We help with other IFPA events. I was at the European Pinball Championship. Did it. Not bad for an old pinball guy. I touched something and it worked. Any event, and in this weekend, we have a tournament going on at Play Mechanics World Championship for their Big Buck Hunter video game. So we're down there trying to interest competitive players in another kind of competition in our pinball machines. As I say, you're an important part of our business, and yet you're just one segment of our business. I get teased about talking about the farmer's three-legged stool, but we need all three legs of those stool. You lose one, and it falls over. I'm probably teased about it because I assume it's because I'm not a farmer, but you know, I don't know why people tease me about it. But we have three segments of customers, and this I want you all to understand, to know what we're doing and how we're trying to make these games for different people. We have operators and their players. That's one segment. We have enthusiasts, collectors, competitors like yourselves. And we have general homeowners. I tongue-in-cheek say rich doctors and lawyers, but it's just people who want a game in their home. Almost half of our business is export games shipped outside of the United States, more than half of our business, if you count Canada as another country and not another state. It's good market for us, very good. Most of our export business is for game operators. There are some homeowners or enthusiasts buying games in Northern Europe, in Australia. Maybe Australia is more than half enthusiasts, but still a lot of operators. But more than half of our business being export, and if you combine what we're doing in America, better than half of our business is for game operators. 20%, almost 20% of our business is games to Italy and to France. Our French customer sells almost no games to homeowners, just to coin-op people. The French enthusiasts who want games usually go to Carl Jacobs in Belgium, which shouldn't be, but it is, so we all know that. Anybody here from France? It would be. I learned that from one of the French enthusiasts. Nice guy, Carl. The Italians, techno players, are customer in Italy, and they tell me that 99.5%. Of their games are sold, that was their figure, to game operators. It's an operating country. The Technoplay is run by the Zacharias, so those of you who know pinball history know that the Zachariah pinball were great, you know, great games, totally different look. It's like the difference between an IBM typewriter and Olivetti, for those of you who remember how the Italian one looked so cool and so forth. Didn't say it worked, but it looked so cool. So anyway, they made good games, and they understand pinball, and they really appreciate pinball. In fact, in 1999, when I bought the pinball company from Sega, changed it from Sega Pinball Inc., just its name, same corporation, to Stern Pinball Inc., and I went to see Marino, and through his translator, Emanuela, these are very good friends of mine, I explained what I was doing, and he said, "Well, we have to help Gary, he's crazy." So to go into pinball, you know, you have to be, I think you heard it earlier, you have to be a little bit crazy. The business, you know, we talk about arcades and games. Will they make money in arcades and so forth? They need some improvement too. But really, we're not in the arcade business. We're mostly in the street business. And I'll come back to this as I finish up and before I take questions. But when I say the street business, our games are in French cafes. There's only one arcade in all of Paris. And it doesn't have a pinball machine in it. It's just not that kind of arcade. Our games are in bars. They're in some bowling alleys, and the new kind of street location is a movie theater. But they're really not arcade games per se. They're for a little bit older crowd. They're for somebody Harry Williams, and I've told this a couple times at Gay to People. He was making a game called Hot Hand. It was a card game with a big flipper at the top on a motor, and it circled and knocked, you know, about this big, knocked balls out of a hole. And he said, "The kids are going to love this game." And this was back in the late 70s, early 80s. And I said, "Harry, it's great. I'm thrilled the kids are going to love it. But your job's to get people drunk and keep them drunk. Most of our games have traditionally been in bars." And, you know, part of our job, one of the things we have to do in part of the design process is everybody in the overhead group has to play pinball machines 15 minutes a day. If you don't want to play pinball, find another job. And it's a problem because people have work to do. You know, they got to do their accounting or this or that. They're also getting too good. I play my 15 minutes a day. Sometimes I miss it. And I have a particular purpose. I'm old and slow and sober, I represent the drunk player. The computer in the game is going to percentage, and I bring the ball times down and things like that. It's very important that we get our gameplay, so we test the games in-house before we test them out-house. But again, a majority of our games are coin-op, are sold to operators for people to play. We have all three segments in America, operators who need them to make money, enthusiasts, you guys, and the general homeowner. We need all three of these segments. I believe myself that if we don't have games making money for operators, and we've done some things to improve the earnings, if we don't have games making money for operators, operators will stop buying them. We can't exist just on, and you can't exist, just on enthusiast interest in pinball machines. If there's no history of pinball in the street, not in my business career, maybe not in my lifetime, but it's going to go away because there's no real interest. No people growing up will be interested in the product. Nobody will want to collect it. Nobody will care anymore. Maybe a few people. You know, people collect cars. They collect old cars because they're cool. And when you drive by a McMansion and the four garage doors open, they've got a Porsche, a Lamborghini, a Bentley, and a bug convertible to drive around. Not one of those four garages has a horse and buggy in it. Nobody's collecting horses and buggies. They're collecting cars. So it has to be a relevant product to be interesting, and we need to keep this product relevant, and that's going to be with your help, not just as collectors. We do need, as I say, all three of those segments, but all three of those segments don't need the same thing. One size doesn't fit all. You know, Mercedes makes, $100,000 car and a $30,000 car. They make different kind of cars. Not everybody can buy the $100,000 car or needs it. And some people want more bells and whistles than in the smaller car. We have different needs. Our customers have different needs. They have one thing in common, and that is that in all cases, the pinball machine should be fun. Should be fun for you all. Should be fun for the operators, players in the pub. Should be fun for the general homeowner, the rich doctor or lawyer. The operator needs to make money while providing fun. That's what he does. He's selling time. He needs to make money. He needs people to play it. He needs to provide entertainment. All designers are trying to do the same thing in Wii games, in slot machines, and in AWPs in the UK. They're trying to, and in pinball, and they're trying to broaden the player base to get more people playing so we can get more interest in our games, whatever kind of game it might be. That's something that we have to do with pinball, and especially with the operator's pinball, the street pinball. If we look at pinballs of a number of years ago, they became so skillful over the years. More and more skill. It became 90% skill, 10% randomness or chance. It used to be probably 50-50. You know, people can argue about the percentages. Harry Williams used to say the ball is wild, and that was, you know, the gist of pinball. It's like any ball and bat game. The ball takes different spins. It does different things. I had to have a chance occasionally against the great player. I had to have that great ball. Otherwise, what am I going to play for a beer? He's going to win every time. I might as well just buy him a bunch of beer. And sit there and watch him play. One thing that I observed, we used to have games across from my office, and every afternoon, Lyman and another programmer, that's Keith, both great players, would go play against each other. But the way they played with our then current games is Lyman would play while Keith was writing software. He'd finally finish his ball. He'd walk by Keith's office. Keith would come in and Lyman would go write software. They never played in the same room together, even though they were playing against each other. The games were so skillful and so long. We brought in our English distributor, John, from Electrocoin, sent us a spin a card, an old Gottlieb game. All of a sudden, these two guys were in there, screaming at the game and screaming at each other and playing in the same room. And occasionally, I could play them and have a chance to win. Not much of a chance, but a chance. There is still skill in it, but you know, it was Lyman who pointed out to me, says, well, no, it's different. It's randomness. It's 50-50. It's not just, return lane to the flipper, return lane to the flipper, return lane to the flipper. So we need to make games for the operating segment that, you know, he can make money with and have some of this randomness, not just all skill. He's selling entertainment. He's selling time. When the great player were playing the games of 5 years ago or 15 years ago, as it developed, he played, you know, on one credit, 50 cents, 75 cents for 45 minutes. He didn't need to play again. When I played on one credit for 45 seconds, didn't want to play again. The game could make a dollar an hour. That was it. And that's the flaw, that's the problem with pinball. Wrong locations, arcades, and games that have the wrong design concept. We have to broaden our player base. We have to include more casual players and give them a chance. Let them have fun. Capital F, capital U, capital N. What we need to do is go back to, and we have, to what I used to call and still call mechanical action pinball. Mechanical things that happen. The casual player, you know, you have three stand-up targets, he's not going to see the lights in front of him. You have three drop targets, he's going to see the target drop when he hits it. It's a state change. He sees the state change. He sees Kenny fall over dead in South Park. The monger go up or down in Iron Man. He sees that he's done something. He sees the result of what he's done. It's self-educating. He wants to do it again. It's Pavlovian pinball. He wants to do it again. He wants to play it again. He wants to see if he can do that again. Mechanical action, not just hitting targets in front of eye candy that moves around, but hit the monger, hit the... I'll let George talk about tomorrow, Transformers. Thank you. Thanks for the help, George. Thanks for the help. Some rules that a casual player can understand. You know, some of these games became so complex in the rules. There was an article quoted Larry DeMar about how the software became so complex. We got to have something for you all. We got to have something for the casual player, something he can understand. I have these people, you know, my customers tell me, we don't know what to do on these games. Our players don't know what to do. We have to get back to where, and we are getting there, to where they have some understanding. Randomness, we've used some magnets, some targets that you don't necessarily know where the ball is going to end up when you do it. Something to shake the game up a little bit. And games that don't play forever. The games that are, you know, 3-minute average, plus or minus, that type of thing, more minus than plus. That's the way the game can make some money. Now, some of you like real long playing games. That means they won't be on the street. Some of you like them at home. Some of you don't even like it there because, you know, you have a real long playing game at home, or you have a tournament. And we have a tournament at our distributor in Canada. All new games, two models, a brand new game. The finals run on, you know, the final game runs on for an hour and a half, 45 minutes each player. He's ready to pull the plug. He's not sure he's ever going to do it again. He's done it twice, maybe never again. But everybody else, I mean, it's not that great a spectator sport. It gets a little boring. You know, as cool as you guys are playing pinball, some of your kids won't play with you. Some of your wives don't want to. They really don't want to watch you. You know, we're just not all that cool. So, you know, for everybody to stand around. I mean, instead of one guy playing and three guys eating Cheetos, you know, four guys could maybe play and have a good time if the games were challenging and yet didn't run on forever like some of these games did. We've changed the design concept. As I've said, we're getting even better with this. Mechanical action, randomness, some rules that the casual player will understand. Our customers, our French customers, our Italian customers, many of our customers here tell us the games are making more money. I see that they're making more money by the few reports we get. We don't get all that many reports. We wish we were getting more, but it appears that that we're on the right track. That's what we're doing for the operator, and many of you end up with that game in the home, either new or used. So, you know, that is what we're trying to do in that segment of the market, that product. That one size doesn't fit all, that particular product. Some of you, collectors, enthusiasts, want a more in your game. You want more mechanical action. You want deeper rules. And it's something that's an investment that you can keep, play, and then sell, and it won't be you know, unlimited of them all over the place. Tell you the truth, there's not that many pinball machines made, even of the pro model, that I think that any of them are not a good investment. But what we decided to do is to continue with our limited edition games for that market, for that collector enthusiast market. One size doesn't fit all. We make we started this with Elvis Gold many years ago. We didn't do one too soon after that. We made Black Spider-Man. We've held our numbers. We said 500, that's all there'll be, or some other number, whatever it might have been. We made some Lord more recently, again, limited edition. We're trying to find the formula of more features and not just eye candy, things you act the ball actually hits, actually does something the ball interacts with, not just, you know, some extra targets and something happens, not just a bunch of chrome. And you can see, you know, by what we're doing now that we're not doing just a bunch of chrome. But the chrome is nice. I like chrome on my personal game, but that's another question. My apartment is basically white and chrome. You know, if it's too small. But if it's moving spray painted white, if it's not moving chrome it, and that's more or less my idea of decorating. Any event, you know, we've been making limiteds, as you all know. The Avatar Limited, the Stones, the Tron, and now Transformer. And Transformer uniquely with, I guess you'd say, three limiteds. The three different versions, the combination plus the Autobot and the Decepticon. Thank you. I've been doing this for. So explaining this to customers all over the world, and then just getting a little tongue-tied here. We did say, huh? Yeah, good guys, bad guys. I know that part. You know? Yeah. I got that part. And you play one side of the game or the other side of the game. I got that part, too. I actually played the game, you know? I got that. I figured out parts of it so far. And we had originally, you know, we're going to make 500 of the combination version of it. All three of them have different back glasses. We'll make 500 of the combination version. We had said 99 of the Decepticon and the Autobot. There'll be 125. We announced that, and we told our customers, our direct customers, okay, there was a demand. There will be no more than 125, and we've always held our number. We hadn't started shipping or building or anything because we're not going to make these till later in October. And if anybody wants to opt out. No problem. We're not going to hold you to your orders, and I'm sure that if you guys have ordered them, your whoever you're buying them from would abide by that also. Of course, the result was that we needed the 125 and more, but there will not be more than 125. So, as I say, we think that this is this differentiation of the product for different segments is important. And now we have to come to what do we want to do for that home segment, that rich doctor and lawyer, again, tongue-in-cheek doctor and lawyer. But, you know, anybody who wants a game in their home that's not really as into it as you are. You know, we see in a lot of these people are going to buy a game for their home. It's cool. They're buying a Pro right now. Maybe they're buying an LE. It's something cool to have. They're not that into pinball, but they were into it when they were younger. It was cool. Or listen, you watch Cribs, one of the shows I can watch with my 24-year-old daughter, and they usually do three houses, and at least one of those, the guy's got a pinball machine in there. The rock star or whatever it is has a pinball machine he's as proud of as his Ferrari. I've tried to get them, by the way, to trade a pinball machine for the Ferrari. That hasn't worked yet, but I'm still working on that. But, it's a game. To them, it's a game. It's a piece of art. It's a piece of furniture. It's a piece of it's an American icon, a piece of Americana. We know, elasticity of demand, basic economics course, tells you if your price goes down, your sales go up. We know that if we can make a less expensive pinball, now we need to hold the cost down on the pro for the operator to get a good return on investment. We have to charge more for the limited edition because there's more in it. We need to get something that's less for these not quite that committed people. You know, here's a guy, who's going to buy a pinball machine. He wants it because it's cool. He's going to tell mommy that it's for the kids because, you know, you guys are probably a little different, but typically any big ticket item coming in that house or taking up a lot of space, mommy's going to approve. And if she doesn't, it isn't coming in there. So he tells them for the kids. We have a friend who's a billiard dealer who sells pinball machines, and she tells me that if a guy comes in to talk about a pinball machine or a pool table, whatever it might be, they'll talk to him for 45 minutes, whatever it takes. They won't close him. If he comes in with his wife, they know they're going to close. Right? It's their house. Sorry, guys. Now, you guys are a little different because you've fooled your wives and what have you into thinking this is. But to the general world and to the real growth of this thing, we need to get something that to build something that is a little price down, a little cost down for this this home segment, this casual home segment. We tried our classic, which was a costed down, non-coin up version of our regular games, a little simpler cabinet, no coin door, that type of thing. And it wasn't costed down enough. We need to continue to study this and see what to do. But we're going to, and our hope is that we get people interested in pinball. Their kids play, they go to the bars, they drink a little too much, they play the pinball machine in the bar. You know, we think that our bar crowd is, you know, 18 to 30 year old, mostly male. And I say 18, the drinking age is 21, but every kid has a phony ID. Mine did, so you know, I assume they're... My ex-wife actually helped my daughter get her phony ID, and when she brought it, it looked too new, so she took it out in the driveway and drove back and forth over it on the car, with the car, to make it look old enough to use and get in. So that was her, not me, but I took her, is what it was. Any event, so, you know, we need to address all three of these market segments, and it requires a different level of pinball. That's what we're trying to do while we're trying to make three and a half, four models a year with different versions of those models. When we sell those games, now that we've got three channels, it's not always three segments and three different products or differentiated products. It's not always through the same channel. So you see that we're selling game distributors. We're selling through billiard dealers, through game dealers. Some of you all here buy and sell games. Some through .coms, through big box stores. But that's really the growth for a lesser price product. But we need to sell through different channels to get to the different segments sometime. And so we've had to do that, and we are doing that. We've also talked about some technical improvements. The product has to change. We have to bring the product into the 21st century. You know that we've got LEDs on, we put them on our Classic to try it and on a game that we sent to China. Then we started putting them on the control lamps and for the LEs, and then it'll be the all the lamps, the GIs and the control on Transformers LE. And the plan, my hope is to get it on all of our games for two reasons. One, some of you may not like the look. I think it looks cool. It looks different to the general public. It'll be more modern looking. Certainly, you know, we need to do something to attract, to look modern, to modernize what our game is, yet still be a pinball machine and not some other kind of game. And the other is it's just that much more reliable, and we want games for operators to be very, very reliable. So, you know, we have to work on that. We're working on a new electronic system that brings us into the 21st century, and you'll see that later next year. You've seen some of the, well, on this game that you're going to see, you haven't seen it yet, but we've announced we're going to decals so that it's better for the operator and for you guys if you need to change it. Because we went into really complex artwork. I mean, I remember when it was a stencil, you know, two colors of stencil and some spackle thrown on it. You'll see that out here. We got so complex with the artwork that couldn't hold the art very easily, so we're sending cabinets back all over the place. We can do better art, higher definition, richer colors with the decal. With digital printed decal than we're doing right now. So we're making that change. And again, you know, and you've all talked some and you've heard some talk about social networking games and talking in the cloud and that kind of thing. And that's all real one day. That's real. The world's going there. You know, we have to realize where we are. The biggest problem with game earnings and gameplay and everything else is this, okay? And we have to figure out how to use this. And I was watching, my two daughters were with me in Colorado during the Academy Awards, and they're sitting there playing Words with, what's the game? Words with Friends. I'm sitting there watching the TV, and they're watching the TV and playing Words with Friends. We need, you know, we need to learn how to use these. You know, yeah, put money in the game through your phone, but more than that, we need to learn how to use these, and that will come. All that will come. So, that's what we're doing. I want you to understand, you know, the segment of the market, the different product for the different segments, the channels, that we're doing some technical things, and then think about what you can do for helping us with pinball. And what that is first of all, I ask you to understand what we're doing. You like some of it, you don't like some of it, understand we're trying things, please bear with us. Give us a chance, give whatever we're doing a chance, and some of it's pretty good. We make some mistakes, some of it's pretty good. Understand that we have to address all these different players, and especially we have to get coin up back. It's not just a home game, it's a social game. It's something that should be played out and about. And if we don't do that, if we treat it just as a home toy, I believe firmly it's going to disappear. One of the things you can do is, I'll say this nicer, you know, you guys are real important to us, especially the competitive part. And it'd be even more important if you would get your leagues out and about. I say out of the basement. You know, take, you know, if you guys have a league, ladies and guys have a league, and you go to a bar and say, I'll put seats in your stools, you know, seats in your stools, they're going to be interested. And they'll talk to their operator. They may talk to their operator. Some of them will. Their operator may do it. Their operator may not care. Sometimes we've got a friend in Chicago, the operator didn't care. He's putting his games in the bar, and all the other pinball enthusiasts then are going there. It works. It can be done. So, you know, if the operator won't, you can put some games out, some of your games out, some of you. And I've seen this in Colorado. I've seen this some other places, Seattle, what have you. But basically, if you play where CoinOp is, that will help the CoinOp business, and that will help the games make money, and you guys will have a good time doing it. At least I have a good time drinking out of the house instead of in the house. So I don't like drinking at home very much, so I have to go out, and I like drinking. hey, you know, I have to apologize to you all. I didn't realize that 5 o'clock, for those staying in the hotel, the free drinks started at 5:30. So if anybody wants to, I understand if somebody, you know, shaking or anything has to go out and get a drink, that's fine. But if you do, I ask you, get me a vodka, bring it back for me, because, you know, I would appreciate that. The last thing I'm going to mention is that we have on our site, some of you have sites, there are other sites that list where pinballs are. Is very helpful. It's helpful for us when we tell somebody where to find a pinball machine. It's helpful for you all when you travel. Look at those sites, at our site, at other people's, report where they are, and go out and play them. But try and keep those sites up to date. I think it's very, very helpful. So let me conclude that we make games as a business, but we do it because we love pinball machines. We make games for all segments of the market. Operators, enthusiasts, collectors, and homeowners. One size doesn't fit all, so we make a pro, a premium. We've tried a classic. We'll try something else. We've got some technical improvements we've done and a lot more you don't know about, and we have to try before you do know about. Some will work. Some may not, so we have to be a little careful about that. And I firmly believe we need coin-op games for there to be a continuation of pinball machines. Work with the IFPA, have some tournaments with them, and all that helps. Get some people playing pinball that are newbies, you know, in a newbie tournament. All that kind of stuff helps. That's what we're trying to do. You know, please understand what we're doing. I hope you appreciate what we're doing. We appreciate your support, and be happy to answer any questions that you have.
licensing look for you? Do you look for licensing? Do you get turned down for stuff you look for? And how do you decide what to do? And I kind of, and I'm a really old school guy, I miss the randomness.
Okay.
Like, what was your last random game, High Roller Casino?
We do like licensing. Some of the guys would like to try something unlicensed. Licensing brings a lot of things to the table. I always get this question. It brings four corners within which to design. You know, Jurassic Park had a ball-eating dinosaur. Why? Crichton, by the way, knew dinosaurs were cool more than we did, and so he was smarter in that respect. It gives you some idea what to do. On Tales from the Crypt, there was a really cool scene in the Dot Matrix with somebody being cut in half with a chainsaw. Very creative on our guy's part. Except that was Joe Pesci. I saw that episode. So it gives ideas. It puts us in touch with other creative people. People who have ideas that aren't just in the pinball world and the pinball ivory tower. Seth MacFarlane gave us 2 hours of speech for a Family Guy. The Simpsons people did the art in Simpsons. Matt Groening's people did. Arnold gave us a speech in the game. The Lord folks told us what elements we had to have in there to really carry forth the license, what we had to have and not miss. So it gives you some of that. If it's a good design, it's coherent because it captures it, and it's should attract the player if it's well chosen, and get what we call the first quarter, which I hope now is the first 75 cents. Having said that, what's really important is the license gets us started. If I call 10% buyer in Italy or 10% buyer in France, and I say I have XYZ game, they say, great, send me two and I'll test it. If I say I got Transformers, they say, great, send me a container and I'm sending you $250,000. Okay? It starts the business. It's cash flow. It's simply cash flow. And that's a big part of what it is. It's hard to pick the right license. Some people don't want to do it. We wanted to do, a James Bond game again. Not a chance. Not interested. They don't want to do it. It's not what they see for their franchise. On the other hand, Arnold's people say being on a pinball machine is a trophy. Matt Groening says, thank God somebody's keeping pinball alive. To Disney, it's a Halo project. To the Rolling Stones, it's a vanity project. They have to want to be part of pinball. Maybe they can use it for some promotion, probably not. They have to want to give the boss a pinball. And when we did Back to the Future, we went to deliver Spielberg a pinball machine, Back to the Future, because they get some games. They get games that cost you a lot more than you think because you give them the games. He'd already gone out and bought one. So this one went to the back lot, to his office on the back lot. It's something that they have to be interested in and want for their franchise. And it's not easy to pick. We have over half our games are exported, so we have to consider that. Yes, sir.
I think one of the greatest pinballs that was never made was Harry Potter. Can you tell us any story about that or others that you...
Yeah, I can. I agree with you. I 100% agree with you. Unfortunately, what's it, J.P. Rollins? J.K. Rollins. She doesn't like drinking. And pinball machines are in bars. So she won't even do a toy pinball. Now, we've got a concept, we're not there. Can't get it. Have been trying for years to get there. Haven't tried for a month and a half. I absolutely agree with you. But not everybody wants to be a pinball. And if you think about it, Lord of the Rings, $1 billion franchise, and they got some money and some games. Big deal. To her, I don't know how big a franchise it is. It's not enough. It's not money. It can't be money. There's nothing can be money for her. It's, does she want it? And if she doesn't, you ain't doing it.
Any other great titles that you can think of that you've tried and wasn't able to get a license?
Yeah, but I'm not going there because I get in trouble. Not right now. Yes, sir.
I got a question. Recently I read an article about saying you guys were possibly getting into Wi-Fi, internet type stuff. I was wondering how that was coming, if you guys were looking at more of the consumer side playing against each other, or...
As I said, the cloud exists, and we have to get into the cloud, but we're not there yet. We've got lots of ideas and a lots to do, but we have a lot to do getting just the basic game into the 21st century. So, yeah, something has to happen. I mean, listen, we got to work with these. It exists. You know, you can't run away from it. Yes, sir.
Is there a reason why you guys don't do as many video modes anymore than you used to? Like, last one I think was like Elvis or something.
Like to play pinball. And video mode is just, you know, we're selling time, let's face it. Video mode, you're usually going to catch the ball and sit there and watch while somebody plays a silly video game. I mean, yeah, there was one in South Park I particularly liked. But it got us in a lot of trouble. but we're really more into playing the pinball, not playing the video game. And when Williams made Pinball 2000, that was different. You know, that was using the video. When we put a video mode up on a dot matrix display, or even it was a monitor, an LCD, I mean, you look at what Gottlieb did years ago and what Bally tried to do. You got to play mediocre pinball, and you were successful. You played a mediocre video game. As far as just, you know, a little feature, you know, a video mode, we just think it's eating time and not playing pinball. We'd rather play pinball. Yes, sir.
Jack just came out with his game recently, and he's gone wide body. Do you foresee that in the future of Stern? Do you like that format?
No. No, but why? If you look at, and it's fine that Jack's doing that and he's doing something different and so forth. First of all, it's exceptionally expensive. Second, you got to find that piece of wood, and that piece of wood is a special piece of wood. Big part of the backbone of a pinball machine is that piece of wood. You got a different size piece of wood. The other reason is, as Harry Williams said, and he made some, you know, Flight 2000 big game for us. You have to put so much more in the game, and the ball slows up. You know, the left, you go from the left slingshot to the right slingshot. If you got them spread there, the ball's going to float by the time it gets there. This is what Harry taught me. So now you got to move them in. You know, look at the ball eater. The whole area used up in the ball eater mechanism in Flight 2000. So it takes a lot more money. You look at the wide bodies that were made in the past by us, by Williams, by whoever it might be, and they take a front molding, cut it in half, or cut it in two-thirds, and weld them together, and next thing you know, you have paid for two front moldings and welding and so forth. It's very expensive. It changes the geometry of the game. It's like, you know, pinball's a sport. It's a ball and bat or a racket and bat or whatever you want to call it, sport. And those of you who've seen the sit-down cocktail table pinballs or anything else, I mean, imagine playing tennis on a round tennis court or on a tennis court that's, you know, 10 foot wider. It's a different game. So we have no plans for a wide body game or a medium body game, which is really what that size is. Yes, sir.
I had the Avatar Limited Edition with the Naughty Ball with the white notes for it. Do you plan to use that in any future games?
Don't know. Don't know. But then again, I'm the business guy, not the designer. George is in charge of game design. He's the vice president of game development. Maybe ask him that tomorrow. You probably get the same answer, but I can't tell you that. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say a lot of us who come to this show are interested in the history of pinball. And you mentioned Harry Williams a couple of times. Can you share with me some impressions you have of Harry Williams or your thoughts about
him? You know, it's been a lot of years. But Harry, you know, God, there's so many Harry stories. I don't know where to start, or Lynn Durant stories, or any of those. And I'm really not the best historian. I live a little too much in the present, and mine gets weak. I'll do the story. George has heard this one. So Harry, I pick Harry up one time, And Harry and Sam had an interesting relationship. You know, Sam ultimately bought Harry out, my father Sam, Harry Williams. But Harry always was with us. My father was a year and a half over at Bally instead of Williams, left Williams for a year and a half. Harry went to Bally with him. Came back to Williams, Harry comes back to Williams. We have Stern Electronics, Harry comes with us there. You know, I wish he had come to Stern Pinball, but he was deceased. So I pick Harry up, and I take him to my father's house, and the three of us are laying on the floor looking at a drawing. And in those days, it wasn't done on CAD, like you saw Borgie up here with or anything like that. It was done on a big drafting table with pencil and paper and maybe an electric eraser, if you were lucky, to make changes. And so they're laying there, and I learned this from Harry because I used the same technique. And Sam's looking at the game, and he says, absolutely, I like this, I like this. The upper left corner, if you change this to doing this, this. He was a great critic, you know, and he knew pinball a lot better than I do. And so, you know, change this, try that. So I take Harry to his hotel, you know, 10 o'clock at night, 10:30. I pick him up at 7:30 in the morning, and we come back, and he goes into Sam's office, and here's the drawing with that left side, just the way it was supposed, you know, Harry, Sam wanted it. He didn't have a drafting table in his hotel. He didn't have any time to redraw the whole thing. He had to come with two drawings. He knew what Sam was going to want, what he was going to say, and you put this one thing, you know, off kilter, and it takes his mind off everything else. I did that with my father. It works. It works. It works.
I always put a mistake that Gary can correct on all my drawings.
I didn't correct one. Somebody else. Never mind. Okay. Any other questions, folks? Yes.
You guys talked about League Pinball before. You guys do anything to support League Pinball on a more local basis?
We support the IFPA. We hope you guys do stuff with them. We have a tournament system in our pinball that is not league, it's tournament. It's not good enough. We're going to rework that. We are going to also have a redemption feature, you know, contrary to, you know, I mean, it's not a redemption game, but it will get us in new locations and new countries, Russia, things like that, that they want redemption in. So we have a lot of things to do. We have tournament to put in it. We've got league redemption to put in it. We have a lot of different places to support. We're not really in the local level. We'd like the IFPA to do that and work with them.
I'm curious if it's not just labor, but how come limit the LEs? Because we've seen over here that the issue can be Tron comes out and everyone's like, oh, you see the Tron LE, that's amazing. When they run out of them, you go, well, I got that money, but I'm not satisfied with the Pro Edition. And you also lose out because someone buys it and puts it up for $7,000, and you're like, well, that could have gone to Stern. Yeah.
We think we see in our experience. First of all, we want to get the LE into the timing a little different. It should be in the beginning. It's going to take us a while to get there, the beginning of the run. We need the game for the operator, and we need it to have some value for his resale value, because part of operating a pinball is being able to sell it. So we need to make the game attractive enough and play enough to be cool, but not quite have all the bells and whistles, whether it's eye candy or games, because we've got to hold the cost down. One of the things that we find is that people want, and you may not, but people want for value a limited number of the games, a limited edition. And for sales, it's easier when there's a feeding frenzy, I have to tell you. And we sell them and sell some other stuff with them. Again, we're not selling to you all, we're selling to the middleman, if you would. But I did it again. Good. It seems to work. We're not sure. We don't know what the right number is. And we're very concerned with what the right number is in light of the economy. Once again, we really need coin-op games to make money, and we need to get them in the right kind of locations and not in amusement parks or whatever or arcades so much unless we have a redemption factor to them. We need all three legs of that stool in these kind of economic times. Yeah.
You were talking about trying to tailor more for the operators, you know, getting that 50% randomness back and previous games. a lot had been more enthusiast-influenced and were 90% skilled. So now that we have these multiple editions of games, both physical differences as well as software differences, do you think it's going to be possible for you to maintain the element of randomness you want for the operators, but still be able to give enthusiasts like ourselves a more skill-based game?
Yes. I feel like Joe Biden, because he was so talkative, and he answered a question with yes one time. We are making more and more differentiation. I think you'll see in Transformers Limited Edition further differentiation than the Pro, and you'll see even more differentiation as we go along. Just as I say, we're trying things, we're learning things. It's an evolution. Pinball design is an evolution. You try something different, and then you build it, and you see that some worked and some didn't. But we're trying to have more in the game and not just a bunch of eye candy, hit the target, not targets, and make some eye candy do something and that type of thing.
Sir. Yes, sir. I know that in your European market, that's mostly operators, but where do you see operators placing pinball machines in this country? So about the only place I've seen them lately, newer CERN machines are in movie theaters.
Movie theaters worldwide is the new street location, no question about it. And we have to be more in bars. Again, we suffer from cell phones. We also suffer from a lot of street gambling. In Illinois, there is no coin-op amusement business, so to speak, because there's so much street gambling became legal. But first they got rid of the gray area games, and we were often... I can remember in my father's days, we were filler. Pinball was a filler in Belgium between the bingos. That's what we did. We filled the spots between the bingos. So many bingos and some amusement machines, and that's what we did. So, yeah, I'd like to be in more bars. Sometimes there's limits to how many games. The next thing you know, it needs an arcade license. But I think that's where we belong. But we have to have the game that attracts people. So, we need to get operators more interested. And they're really running out of other stuff to operate. Video is very sleepy right now. Yes.
Yeah. Can you tell us anything about what Steve Ritchie's working on?
No. No, let me rephrase that. Yes, I could. But I can't. You don't want me to do that. It's not that we're secretive, but our job right now is selling Transformers. It's a great product. We have, we're making some more Tron, some more Avatar. We're out of Iron Man, and won't be able to make any more. We got some Stones. We got some great games to sell, and we're going to sell those and work with those. And when the next game is ready, we want it to wow you, as we hope to, as we know Transformers will. And when we get there, we'll get there. Anybody? Yes, sir.
Any chance of doing an Avengers machine? Follow up on Iron Man?
That's an interesting title. We have a very good relationship with Marvel. It's an interesting title. And we do exceptionally well with superhero, comic book superhero, movie characters. We're very close with Marvel and with DC both. Yes.
On that note, do you see yourself refreshing some of the classics like Spider-Man and some of the older titles for demand of the newer home consumer?
The problem with doing that is that the license run out, and the licensor then wants another full wallop, shall we say. And in the case of Spider-Man, using that as an example, not only do they want a full wallop, but they've changed what they want Spider-Man to look like. The Spider-Man characters from the movies that we went with are not the Spider-Man to the future. Okay, so you're talking about a whole new game, whole new art package. No, they would not license you, regardless of cost, to remake that game. Keep it, let it collect greater value, both the reds and the blacks, the operator's version and the collector's version, and you can count on there not being more of them. Yes?
Obviously, you probably want to keep numbers pretty close to your chest, but when it comes to licensing, do you actually pay out a per machine basis?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Have any companies come to you and said, Gary, put our name, build a theme?
Yes. Yes, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's something that we've wanted to do. And we also get periodically some advertising agency that wants to make, 50 games of something. Now, it's very hard and expensive to make a custom game, and we don't really have the people. We're so busy doing what we're doing. Years ago, we made two for Mrs. Spelling. We made two games for her for her husband. She paid for all the art and what have you, and we undercharged her. Based on what the market would bear, I think we charged her $200,000 or $250,000 for the first game and $2,000 for the second, something like that, because she had unlimited funds. But you just don't run into that.
But this cool guy over there made a game based on an automobile that's very popular called Corvette. And I just wondered, like, Mustangs or even more?
They want us to license from them. And the question is, will we make, no, no, and they didn't pay him. Yeah, no. What?
I said, I love Mustangs.
I do too. As long as it's a convertible. Is yours a convertible?
No.
Oh, well, sorry. All cars are good if the top goes down. I have two convertibles, one in Chicago and one in the winter area, but it's, I have to have it there. Any other questions, or have I warned you guys? Okay, go ahead.
Is there custom speech in Transformers from the actors in the movie?
There's custom speech in Transformers, yes.
Nice.
Yes, sir.
Your new operating system, do you have a ballpark for when that's going to be coming out?
We are working on a whole new electronics package that is very modern, but sometime next year, when it's ready.
Cool.
When it's ready. Yeah. Yes.
You said that the GI upcoming games is going to be LEDs. I'm one of the people who doesn't like LEDs in GI. Will you be able to change them out, or will it be permanent like under the playfield?
I'm going to only talk about the Transformer LE, because that's all that we have right now, and that is light bulbs. It's LED light bulbs for the GIs. It's surface, huh? You could put your 555s in. It's wedge bases to the largest extent. The control lamps are surface mount under the inserts, but they're under inserts.
Will they be color matched this time? Unlike Tron, how it was just all cool white for the most part.
I don't know the answer to that. I don't think so. Are they yes and no? Go ahead. Yes and no.
It depends. There are some that are specifically a color.
Cool. Yeah.
So, speaking of color, we saw the color display this morning. Are you guys going to go to different displays than dot matrix?
We're definitely going to a different display. It will probably follow the new electronic system at some point.
Cool. Very good.
And my answer was yes. I would have just said yes. Yes, but not necessarily that display. I mean, you'll obviously get more out of George than you will out of me.
Yes. I said a different display. That's pretty big.
Mine was yes. Okay, go ahead.
So what things are in your collection? This changed.
I don't have one in my apartment anymore because it's small. I have a bunch of pinball machines at the office. The last pinball machine I had at home, no, not the last, but I hadn't liked a lot. I had Guns N' Roses at home, and if I had taken it home to learn it, and I never took it back. So, and then my oldest daughter was a film major, and so she had to do one of her little films, and that was... So what we did is, the game just flowed beautifully. So, I hit the ball around, and she was down inside it with the camera, and that was her project for film school. She went to Boulder, University of Colorado, in film school. So, now it was very cool. It was very cool. I have games in a factory every day. I'm supposed to play 15 minutes. So I sometimes play more than that, sometimes less, but that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You talked about living in the moment. Do you have any favorite stuff from the old days? Because I collect a lot of old machines.
I will have to give you the same line that many of you heard before, and that's when you ask me my favorite game, I have to go out on the line and see what's there. We don't make any game that I don't like, and being the salesman that I am, I mean, I love Transformers, and I actually do love Transformers. But last week I loved Tron, you know, that type of thing, you know. And I actually do love that game too. But I really love Transformers. Yes, sir?
I'll let you have a question. Was there anything that your dad liked in particular?
I don't know. I don't remember. I honestly don't. The game that comes to my mind because of what he went through in the design process was OXO, O-X-O, the ABC Rubber made the little tic-tac-toe board thing in the middle of it, that type of thing. Of course, it had electromechanical. It had a relay bank in it. It took two men and a boy to lift the sucker, and I think that's because they added the outhole bonus to it or something. Yeah, something like that. I don't remember. A lot of years ago. Yes, sir.
Hey, so thinking about the home collector market, the enthusiast market, like we have here, some of the games that you've already shipped, and Wheel of Fortune leaps to mind as an example, are known to have incomplete features, maybe even ROMs that are in the designer's hands but haven't been released. Is there any thought about allowing a little time to flesh those out and toss collectors a bone, give them some upgrades?
It's been the thought. We've done, you know, we've done some upgrade to Spider-Man. Yeah, and that was really movie company related. You know, there are times when the movie companies, it wasn't in the case you're mentioning, but when the movie company, they move on to the next project, and they're done. You know, I said, okay, come on, you said when you were done with the movie, you were going to give us this or that and so forth. But there's nobody to talk to them. They're just gone. So we have been able to do some in that respect. We will not be shipping any games that are either that don't have everything operative in the future, and that doesn't mean that we won't come out with some improvement to it at some time later. Certainly if there's a bug, you know, and that happens, there'll be a code update for that. But, you know, we may say after we're, you know, done with something that, yeah, we're gonna say, okay, 2 months later, 3 months later, here's another upgrade to it. Maybe to earn more money, maybe to make it more enjoyable for you all, what have you. Any other questions? That it? Okay, thank you very much.